From the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Weekend Ozarks at Large for Sunday, June 8th, 2014. I'm Kyle Callums. The KUAF Summer Jazz Series opens its 16th season with the jazz fusion group The Yellow Jackets, June 21st at 8 p.m. at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium. The Grammy Award-winning Yellow Jackets will present their high-energy mix of jazz, funk, and blues. The Summer Jazz Series is presented by the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society. A link to tickets available online at KUAF.com. Ahead on this edition of Weekend Ozarks, afloat along the Buffalo River nearly a year after a hog farm began business near the waterway. And a brand new whitewater kayaking park near Siloam Springs is almost ready for the public. And speaking of being ready for the public, last night the Walmart Amp in Rogers had its public debut. Blake Shelton was the first headliner for the brand new venue. A few days before that first concert, Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda had a sneak preview opportunity.
Welcome to the very first preview with actually our clothes on. We have tents, we have bathrooms, we have a stage. I know some of you were here for our topping off ceremony, and we were fighting that wind on the stage, but look at us now, and we are just so thrilled.
Yesterday afternoon, Peter Lane, president and CEO of the Walton Arts Center, greeted a group of sponsors and members of the media who gathered at the Walmart Amp's new permanent home in Rogers. After the Walton Arts Center purchased the Amp in February of 2011, the venue moved from its original location at the Northwest Arkansas Mall to the Washington County Fairgrounds. The Amp is now in its permanent location along I-49 just west of Pinnacle Hills Promenade. Having owned the Amp for a few years now, Lane said they discovered what an economic opportunity the Amp is for the community and the region. He said 35% of the Amp audience comes from outside of Benton and Washington counties, so it's likely these concert goers stay at hotels and eat at restaurants in the region. The Amp will also benefit the community by providing another venue that nonprofit organizations, for example, can use to host their events. Lane said an outdoor amphitheater is an important amenity for local residents.
You know, in 2012, the Walton Family Foundation, which conducts lots of surveys, did one that we really grabbed onto, and it was a survey about what is missing in our community. And it was a survey of the average guy, a lot of people in this community from all walks of life. And at the top of the list, above ballparks, above trails, above restaurants, above opera companies, was an outdoor music pavilion. We really like that statistic because it really said to us, this is what the community was asking.
While guests were given a tour of the new facility, crew members worked on finishing some last-minute details. The towering black stage that sits in the middle of the amphitheater was filled with brown boxes containing 55-inch flat-screen televisions. A handful of workers assembled the flat screens into one large screen, which hung on the west side of the stage. General manager and previous Amp owner Brian Crown said there will be two screens on either side of the stage that measure 14 feet wide by 25 feet tall.
Those are all Samsung TVs. Samsung came on as a sponsor with us, and we're actually building these big video walls. Each one is made up of 36 individual TV panels.
Well, how did that partnership come about?
Well, it came about because I was actually visiting with Samsung about a band I work with, and then they found out what all I did with this, and they started the conversation about possibly having them come on as a partner, and we're very excited to have them. It's amazing, amazing company.
To the naked eye, the stage looks considerably larger than it did in its previous incarnations. But exactly how big is it?
Oh, good Lord, it's huge. It's about 90 feet across the front when you include the video bays. From the deck to the grid is 46 feet tall. The main grid's designed to fly up to 85,000 pounds of equipment. We can do another 10,000 pounds each in the video bays. So we designed the stage to basically handle any tour that might be on the road.
The stage, which has ramp and stair access, has a loading dock that can accommodate up to four semi-trucks. Musicians can access the stage by walking out from their dressing rooms, which are located in a building directly to the east of the stage, and through an entrance at the back of the stage. While they do have to walk outside, the musician's path is completely covered thanks to a white awning. Crown estimated the new venue will allow them to accommodate 90% of acts touring on the road. However, he was quick to note the amp attracted plenty of talented musicians in the past.
You know, but I always used to tell folks, I said, come inside my fence and you'll forget you're on a mall parking lot. And we created a great experience there. And you know, what's cool is the seed that was planted, you know, 10 years ago by Dan White, the primary owner. And then, you know, when I bought it in 08, we continued to grow it and try to keep people excited about it. And then, you know, fortunate to have the Walton Art Center have the interest to purchase from me with all the goal that we're also working together to grow it into this. So it's real exciting for the region.
The mall parking lot may no longer be part of the venue, but its signature white tent is, although this is a new cover with some unique features.
It's an amazing, this is the company called Bird Air made this. They actually made the roof over the Denver airport. So this is load-bearing. It's kind of a Kevlar structure. It all drains back into the poles, but doesn't drain out. It's supposed to be guaranteed for 25 years and rated for up to 90 to 100 mile an hour winds. So it's the upkeep on it is keep the drains clean and we should be okay.
3,300 seats are located underneath the tent, and about the first 12 rows are located in what's called the Kellogg's Bowl. The folding chairs in these front rows can be removed if musicians want a standing crowd near the stage or if they have a thrust stage. There is lawn seating on a grassy hill located opposite the stage, but concert goers will no longer be able to bring their chairs. This will keep patrons from interfering with the sightlines of other guests. With lawn seating, General Manager Brian Crown estimated the venue can accommodate more than 7,000 people. Crown limited capacity to 6,000 for Saturday's concert because he said technically it's their soft opening and a client event with Walmart presenting the community concert. Crown didn't want to overwhelm the venue and region right away because he said it's best to grow into your maximum capabilities. When the amp opens to the public Saturday night, Crown expects patrons will be pleased with the new venue.
They're going to go, holy cow, this place is huge. Wow, it's beautiful. Oh my God, there's not really a bad seat in the house. Wow, that stage is amazing. I mean, I really think it's going to be genuine excitement.
More information about the amp and its 2014 season are available at ArkansasMusicPavilion.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Later on this edition of Ozarks, one of the greatest achievements in nature.
If you're on a 1,000-mile journey or a 2,000-mile journey, you have to stop at a gas station every couple hundred miles and refuel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And exactly the same for the Monarchs. They have to refuel all along the way, both going their southward journey and their northward journey.
Monarch butterflies cover thousands of miles. We'll hear about some of the more amazing aspects of the journey. That's later on Weekend Ozarks at Large.
Space tourism is almost here.
We would love to be able to see all sorts of people having the chance to experience space.
And it's not just about going up. It's about coming back down.
Because at 18,000 miles an hour, you can get to pretty well anywhere on Earth in about 40 minutes.
I'm Guy Raz, Richard Branson, Bill Ford, and others on the future of travel. That's next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
Sundays at noon on 91.3 FM.
C&H Hog Farms, located on the Buffalo National River watershed, has been in operation for almost a year now. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich takes us to an Ozarks homestead a mile downstream to illustrate why the swine breeding factory remains controversial.
Big Creek cascades down a rocky forested gorge past the Fowler homestead northwest of Mount Judy. Sitting at the kitchen table, Jewel Greenhall Fowler says her family has maintained this place for centuries.
So my great-grandparents homesteaded this, and I'd say somewhere in the early 1700s, we always had clean water to drink. I have a little spring right up here.
This historic homestead is less than a mile from a new swine breeding factory farm. And daughter Pam Fowler says the smell is horrific.
And it varies. Sometimes it's of the morning. Sometimes it's all day long. Sometimes it's of the evening. It's just, I can't describe how awful it is. We can't go outside.
C&H Hog Farms was permitted by the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality in late 2012 to house up to 6,500 swine, a mix of sows, piglets, and boars, into what's called a confined feeding animal operation, CAFO for short. And Jewel Fowler says she's never heard tell of such tight quarters and doesn't like it. Mount Judy's a tight-knit community where dissent is discouraged.
I'm just like an onion in a petunia patch because I'm the only one that's against it because people around here were poor. There's no jobs around here. And they thought that, you know, if there's an opportunity for this guy to make money.
CNH Hog Farm owner Jason Henson, under contract with Cargill, opened up his new hog breeding complex last spring to media. Perpetually pregnant sows are confined to concrete floor barns, to narrow metal gestation and later lactation crates. Weaned piglets are shipped off to be fattened and slaughtered. At capacity, the factory can generate up to 2 million gallons of sewage a year, held in storage lagoons and sprayed on a constellation of nearby farm fields. One field is close to Mount Judy's Public School, says Pam Fowler.
You know, the teachers there say that they smell it all the time. A lot of days they can't take the kids out to recess because it smells so horrible.
Odors are not regulated by the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality, and swine farms, studies show, emit hydrogen sulfide, ammonia, and particulate, which can cause eye irritation, nausea, and headache. Children with asthma can also be affected. But to many farmers, that's the smell of money. Hog and poultry waste are routinely spread on farm fields in Arkansas to grow pasture to feed cattle. Even Big Creek is changing, Pam Fowler says. The rocks are slimier and green algae blooms clump in the crystalline water.
Now when I go down there to wade, I think, is it really safe to be in this water?
That's why the Fowler family has allowed experts like UA geoscientist emeritus Dr. Van Brahana to come sample the creek. They worry it's also polluting the Buffalo National River, which is about 5 miles downstream. This hot June morning, Dr. Van Brahana paddles the Buffalo National River beneath blazing blue skies. While negotiating a bend of swift water, he talks about the water quality monitoring he's conducting.
The analyses themselves are being run at no charge by Joe Nix down at Ouachita Baptist University. I'm doing all of the sampling, the dye tracing at no charge. And we have a variety of students. We have a variety of retirees, spectacular individuals who are passionate about this river.
Big Creek Basin samples taken prior to the farm going online were free of excess nutrients and pathogens, he said. So that baseline exists now. And to prove just how quickly contaminants can move through Ozark's karst, fractured subsurface limestone, sandstone, and shale, Dr. Rahana conducted non-toxic dye tracing in March.
And we got very fast velocities.
The National Park Service is also monitoring Big Creek Basin. And a team of UA researchers funded by the state legislature are sampling the watershed as well.
They are tied to the agriculture department, so I personally feel that it's appropriate to have a group that does not have that tie, that is collecting similar type information, and that represents us.
This spring, high levels of E. coli were documented in the basin, either kicked up by turbulence or traced to the swine farm. No one knows yet. That's why Brahana's team will next attempt to source track it using state-of-the-art genetic methods. Out of the gate, CNH Hog Farms has been plagued with problems. According to ADEQ compliance records, the sewage lagoons, permitted to leak as many as 5,000 gallons per day, show chronic liner cracks and erosion. Spray fields were not clearly mapped to protect riparian buffer zones or steep embankments, and a carcass management plan was not in place. In response, owner Jason Henson said problems have been addressed. He also demanded requested portions of that report be redacted from public view. They were not. Paddling down the Buffalo, Dr. Van Brahana is surrounded by a media flotilla armed with cameras and microphones, coordinated by the National Parks Conservation Association, which works to protect our nation's national parks. And wading into the gravelly river, on a break, Emily Jones, senior program manager over the southeast region, has strong opinions regarding the new swine CAFO on the Buffalo.
There's a lot of places where these things are much more appropriate. This kind of farming might be more appropriate, but the watershed of a national park, a national river, America's first national river, it's just not the most appropriate location, so we'd like to see it moved out of this watershed.
The National Parks Service Conservation Association has formed a coalition with several local and state groups, including the Arkansas Canoe Club and the newly formed Buffalo River Watershed Alliance, which counts 1,000 members.
Our goals are to shut down CNH Hog Farm and stop any future CAFOs in the Buffalo River watershed.
President Gordon Watkins said with legal support from Earth Justice, they filed a federal lawsuit challenging the U.S. Department of Agriculture Farm Service Agency and U.S. Small Business Administration for their inadequate review and improper authorization of a $2.4 million loan guarantee to CNH Hog Farms.
We're seeking a revocation of the loan guarantees would be the ultimate outcome. This would not necessarily close the swine operation. We've known that from the beginning, but this is strictly challenging the loan guarantees that the federal government provided. And it's on the basis that that there was an inadequate environmental assessment done, that it's really was kind of a slapdash job by the FSA, and the SBA just sort of accepted their work.
Gordon Watkins is a proponent of sustainable community-based agriculture. And in contrast, he says, the farm startup was conducted behind closed doors.
That's, I think, in large part due to an inadequate requirement by the Arkansas Department of Environmental Quality. They're the ones who issued the permit. And this was the first and so far the only permit issued under the Regulation 6 requirements. And that regulation does not require notification of neighboring landowners, unlike the other more common Regulation 5 permit.
Several coalition members have petitioned the Arkansas Department of Pollution Control and Ecology to fix those regulations. Sitting outside the Gilbert Cafe after the media float, Alice Andrews with Ozark Society says preserving the river is critical.
The Ozark Society and the Arkansas Public Policy Panel filed a petition with Pollution Control and Ecology Commission to initiate third-party rulemaking, which will affect Regulations 5 and 6, and it would basically prevent any more CAFOs that are medium or large size on the in the Buffalo River watershed.
In the interim, PCNE issued a six-month moratorium on CAFO construction on the Buffalo National River. A public hearing on the matter will be held June 17th in Harrison. Public comment due July 1st. A decision expected by the end of the year with additional review. CNH Hog Farms is among 200 swine farms operating in Arkansas. And according to ADEQ, swine farms previous to the new CAFO rule could have an unlimited number of hogs. The agency does not maintain a tally or range, but a look at two records indicate one farm in Washington County has nearly 7,000 swine, another on Benton County, 9,000. As for corporate pork, Smithfield is the fattest, followed by Tyson Foods, Swift, then Cargill, CNH's integrator. In an email correspondence for this story, a Cargill spokesperson said, while there are no plans to grow its hog operations in Arkansas, farm consolidations should be expected. And Cargill also said, no more swine CAFOs are planned for the Buffalo National River watershed. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
This section of the Illinois River, about 4 miles south of downtown Siloam Springs, has always been a favorite for floaters. A natural feature here, a ledge under the water, has long provided a bit of a rush on what is sometimes a pretty sedate stretch of water. A combination of what was originally here and some recent engineering is creating even more of a rush. Two featured rapids. The Siloam Springs Whitewater Recreation Park will officially open June 28th. But yesterday, city officials, engineers, and other interested parties took a final walkthrough. Tom Burrows, the state director for the American Canoe Association, spent some time looking at the new rapids. He says he's floated this spot before.
Well, what we have here is just a nice smooth flow. And because of the source of the water upstream, this river flows basically year-round. So even in the summertime, it's still a nice, cool place to come and play.
There are two obvious dramatic rapids easily seen from the bank of the river. Tom offers a brief description of what's been created.
It's a nice, smooth, glassy tongue. And what this allows is for paddlers to get up there and surf. And that's where typically we're sitting on the wave using gravity and the flow of the water both together, balancing to keep the boat in position in the water without losing distance going downstream. The next rapid farther downstream is a little bit larger, and it's a little bit faster, so it might not be as easy to surf, but it's certainly fun to paddle through.
The amenities at the park are not just in the water. There are picnic tables, paved trails, and changing rooms. Holland Hayden, the communications director for the city of Siloam Springs, says the city wanted to create a park that was not just for kayakers and canoeists.
One of the reasons the picnic tables are here, and you know, we have this kind of amphitheater seating so that you can sit down and you can watch the kayakers and the more experienced canoers and those playing in the rapids and just kind of watch and enjoy your day. And you know, we have the changing area, we have porta potties so that you can bring your picnic down here and just enjoy the afternoon.
The attention to detail on the land here, as well as the newly created rapids in the water, is the result of a partnership. Stuart Nolan, the president of Crist Engineering in Little Rock and one of the architects behind the Whitewater Park's rapids, says the park wouldn't exist without those partners, including the nearly $2 million investment from the Walton Family Foundation. But he says the city's decision to accept ownership was critical as well.
And then the city's willingness to take it on, because there will be, you know, it's a significant commitment. I mean, I'm sure you've talked to Hayden and others with the city about that. I mean, this is a city park, so they're going to have to take care of it.
Holland Hayden, with the city, says efforts were made at every step of the process to keep the formerly undeveloped spot as natural as possible. Two rain gardens have been installed, and the lights in the parking lot have very focused downward beams to eliminate as much light pollution on the night sky as possible. And those lights work without electricity. They're solar-powered because there's no electricity here.
And the Siloam Springs Electric Department were the ones who put this in, and they've done a great job. They built the lights up high enough so that they'll withstand that flood in case that happens, which at some point the Illinois River will flood. So they're high enough up so that they're safe, but they're still solar and they provide great light.
Yesterday, while members of the Arkansas Canoe Club surfed over the new rapids repeatedly and city officials looked at the features, Delia Hawk was knee-deep in weeds. She's the executive director of the Illinois River Watershed Partnership, a nonprofit organization that's also been included in the planning of the park. She took the sneak preview as an opportunity to do some hands-on maintenance to the rain gardens that the IRWP has planted.
You know, if we could just raise weeds, we'd be silent. So what we've done here is a nice rain garden with native plants. And we've had just in the last 2 months, you know, periods of drought and some substantial rain. So what we're doing is just kind of taking the weeds that have popped up here and making sure our native plants get established and let their roots grow down deep, because they will be able to, you know, subsist during drought and times of rain. But they're all looking really good.
She says the park also has 275 new native trees and about 500 new native plants adjacent to parking lots, picnic tables, and the changing station. Most agree it will, however, be the newly created rapids in the Illinois River that will draw most people. Shane Siegel, the project engineer, says the already existing bedrock ledge was fundamental to the park's creation.
And that's why this spot was chosen by the Walton Family Foundation. That spot created a feature that's really close to where feature number two is right now, but obviously not man-made. And flow dependent and probably medium quality. And we were lucky enough to be able to come in and do all the hydraulics and change things around and try to maximize that hydraulic drop to create two features instead of one feature. And obviously all the amenities that go with it.
Shane, who says he's had a hand in creating many whitewater parks throughout the U.S., says this kind of work is about 50% art and 50%, his words, geeky engineering. Ron Swan, the president of TSP Contractors, oversaw the actual construction of the new features. Yesterday, during the sneak preview, he looked at kayakers taking their turns at the water and remarked the area looks quite a bit different now than it did 2 years ago.
There was quite a bit of overgrowth in this area, particularly as you got down into the trees and towards the river. Quite a bit of undeveloped, just fallow land to the east and west. And then, of course, the bridge was here, so the old bridge looked quite a bit different.
That old bridge has been removed, and a new one is under construction. Dan Daniels, who was quite busy getting wet most of yesterday, says he knows exactly how long it will take him to get to these rapids from his home on Dixon Street in Fayetteville.
Once they get the bridge finished and we can cross over, it'll be exactly 25 miles from Dixon and West.
Until then, it's not that much further for him to make it over for an afternoon.
It's a lot of fun out here. We've got a lot of dynamic features to play in and, you know, just a great learning spot, a good place to get a workout in. It's a lot of fun.
Shane Siegel, the project engineer, says he's pleased with what's been created, though already yesterday he was seeing minor tweaks that could be made. He says one of the top priorities in creating these engineer rapids was to remember the Illinois River has been here a long time, and there's a responsibility.
And that's a balance. You know, we certainly have, there's critics out there that just say, leave a river alone. Don't ever touch the river. And then there's also people that have come up to me and said, look, you opened a whole new world to us. Just like the gentleman before me, we can create an environment that's more controlled than a natural wild river that's raging from a storm. And we can introduce people in a safer manner to come out to the river and hopefully appreciate it and enjoy it and get something out of it. And if nothing else, you know, have a good day and have fun. It's all about fun. Come enjoy it.
The official opening for the park will be June 28th, and it will include enough free food for the first 500 curious people. The park is scheduled to be open 7 days a week from an hour before sunrise to an hour after sunset. There is also a family swimming area away from the new rapids. And Tom Burrows with the American Canoe Association, who also teaches swift water rescue classes, offers one gentle reminder. These rapids are on a natural river. It's not an amusement park.
And even though there are sidewalks and places to walk down, it is critical that we still maintain good safety practices, especially always wearing a life jacket that's properly fitted and fastened.
You can learn more about the Siloam Springs Whitewater Recreation Park, including the best route to get there from downtown Siloam Springs, at either SiloamSprings.com or the City of Siloam Springs Facebook page. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums. Sunday, June 8th, 2014. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
And I'm very excited.
Good. You want to share this excitement with us?
No.
That's the show, folks.
Yep, that's it.
What do you got?
No, what am I excited to talk about?
You often like to talk about theater.
I do, and this is a great theater preview.
Ding, ding, ding. Okay.
This is awesome. If you've never seen Wait Until Dark,
mm-hmm.
which was a movie with Audrey Hepburn.
Yes. I saw it as a kid, and it scared the living out of me.
Well, as a play, it will still scare that out of you. If you live alone, you might want to go buy a baseball bat and then go see the Rogers Little Theater production. It's about a blind girl who is being played by Jordan Scott, who is Judy Scott's granddaughter. How cool is that?
Pretty cool.
The blind woman finds out that not everyone she thinks is a friend is a friend.
And this has been set up through an innocent sort of set of incidents.
Yes.
A doll has been brought into the house that she doesn't know
anything about.
Right.
And she ends up finding out you really can't trust
anybody.
Anybody. This is on stage this weekend and next at Rogers Little Theater, 2:00 today and again starting Thursday. And portions of the show will be done in the dark.
I was about to ask if, because in the film, I've never seen this produced on stage, in the film, there are parts where the screen just goes black
because
you're now experiencing what Audrey Hepburn's character is experiencing.
Exactly.
So are we giving something away if we tell the audience that?
That you will see it from her perspective more than one time.
Fun.
Tickets.
How dark can it get in there?
Pretty dark.
Okay.
Because there aren't any exterior windows in RLT.
Yeah, that's right. Okay.
It should be fun. Tickets are $17 to $48. Of course, the $48 includes dinner at 631-8988. Now, if you want to laugh, you know that Ken Ludwig is funny as a playwright.
Over the top sort of broad, funny.
And there is a show called Leading Ladies that involves men in drag.
Yeah.
How could that be funnier? These two guys who were down on the luck English actors on what they call the Moose Lodge circuit find out that this very rich old woman is waiting for her niece and two nephews to show up so she can give them all her money.
Well,
how convenient.
Yes.
So they go in pretending to be them, except that the nephews aren't Max and Steve, they're Maxine and Stephanie, and hilarity, of course, ensues.
Yes.
2 o'clock today at Fort Smith Little Theater, and again starting Wednesday through next weekend. Tickets are $10.
And I don't mean it as an insult, but it's broad comedy.
Yes.
It's big and
funny.
Yes.
You don't have to think about whether you're supposed to laugh.
Right, right.
And then the one I'm really excited about is seeing Jamie McGaugh's Beside Myself as a fully realized play.
I have, you know, we did a series of stories on this play mm-hmm. as it was going through workshop, mm-hmm. and I've seen it. And then I went to the
George's.
The reading, kind of more than just a reading, but still pretty
but
much
still
a reading.
But still script in hand.
Yeah. And so I'm very anxious about this, too.
Of course, I remember Jamie, that I'm mm-hmm. going to date myself. The first play I saw in Arkansas, he was a senior in high school playing the lead in Godspell at Bentonville High School. And he was amazing then.
I remember seeing him in The Boys Next Door
oh.
on the university.
And
I remember,
with Rosenauer?
Yes.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, and I didn't know who this guy was, but I was thinking, this guy's got talent. He mm-hmm. was just amazing. And so now he's a playwright. He's not in this play.
No, he went off, became an equity actor in New York, mm-hmm. came home, started working on the script because he had started a band in New
right.
York. He had songs he hadn't used. He had stories he wanted to tell. And it became this show. It stars Jim Goza, who is also amazing.
Of course. That's a perfect.
Isn't it?
So he's in the lead role?
Yes, he's in the lead role, playing essentially Jamie's character.
Right, but an exaggerated Jamie's. Tuned it up a little
right.
bit. Right. Yeah.
And coincidentally, their birthdays are one day apart in huh. June, which huh. is funny. One day in several years. The show includes a lot of rock and roll. It is the first time the Arkansas New Play Festival has done a fully staged show. It's always script in hand readings.
Right.
And the rest of the shows will be script in hand readings. So you've got a choice of Beside Myself, 7 o'clock Thursday, 8 o'clock Saturday, and 2 o'clock next Sunday.
Is this at Nadine Baum?
This is at Nadine Baum. Tickets are $10 to $18, or you can buy a $35 pass for the entire festival, which includes Just Like Us by Karen Zacharias,
mm-hmm.
which is based on Helen Thorpe's bestseller.
Yes.
It's at 6 o'clock Friday. Dis Farmer by Werner Trashman, which I've also seen as a staged reading before.
Yeah.
About an eccentric 1940s Arkansas photographer.
Real life. This
great
he really lived, yes.
Great show. 8 o'clock Friday. And What God Hath Wrought by John Walsh. It's about a customer service super agent who can handle any request, but when a mysterious Morse code message comes in from 1857, she might have met her match. That's at 4 o'clock Saturday, plus the Young Playwright Showcase at 1 o'clock Saturday, plus the 24-hour playoff at 6 o'clock Sunday, and you can get all that for $35.
And if only there was some way that you could get a taste of these at a free preview at, say, a public library before.
Wouldn't that be cool?
Maybe we'll do one Wednesday night at the Fayetteville Public Library.
What time might you do that?
Well, that you caught me there. It's in the evening.
Okay.
Before the end of the show, I'll look that up. I'll look on my schedule and see when I'm going
to
be
good.
There.
Let people
yes.
know. Okay, if you're looking for something to do this afternoon, the Mountain Street stage with Hogtown Hot Club at 2 o'clock at the library.
They're fantastic.
If you are not at these free Sunday concerts, where are you and why aren't you there?
Mm-hmm.
They're cool. They're awesome. They're free. I saw Isaiah's All-Stars last Sunday with my daughter.
Yeah, and it's a time because usually if you're going to see Isaiah, he doesn't start till 10 or so at George's. Mm-hmm. And you might not be able to take your kids or you might not be able to stay awake. So this is free.
This is awesome.
And they play very well in there.
Oh, yeah. It's also Sidewalk Sunday at the Walmart Museum in Bentonville with fencing and balloon art.
Fencing like a foil?
One assumes. I don't know if they're going to poke the balloons or not.
Okay.
And Tales from the South is tonight at Main Stage on North Main in Eureka Springs with Paula Morrell. That's from 4 to 8 with a 6 o'clock showtime, and that's $25.
And that's a lot of fun if you go to one of those.
And that's a lot of stuff.
That is. All good. Becca Martin Brown, features editor of Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This week on This American Life.
It seemed as if this time capsule hadn't been opened in 50 years.
Three boys break into an old abandoned house.
All their personal belongings were right there. So they felt so close.
You don't leave things like a wallet with money in it
or your address book.
Something terrible had happened. Something catastrophic had happened to the people in the house.
That's Sunday at 10 a.m. on 91.3 FM.
Every year, monarch butterflies travel thousands of miles, and researchers continue to be simply amazed by the animal's journey. This week, Ozarks at Large's Christina Karnatz talked to Donald Steinkraus, our OAL insect expert, about one of his favorite subjects.
There's a western population which migrates, they're sort of west of the Rockies, and they migrate down to certain places in California. And so that's one population. Then there's a population which encompasses the whole eastern North America, and that's the one that goes to Mexico. So our monarchs would go to Mexico, but so would Minnesota's and Maine's and Vermont, Delaware's, all that eastern seaboard population. So it's a very vast area, and they make this really, it's pretty remarkable, 2,000 to 3,000 mile migration. The little butterfly itself only weighs about half a gram, 500 milligrams. So for this very small animal to fly up to 3,000 miles, that's impressive.
So it's the same group of monarchs that start, that finish.
Not sure what you mean.
Well, I mean, they're able to make the whole entire journey.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. That fall generation, there's four generations of monarchs a year. So the fall generation in Minnesota, which I'm familiar with because I go to Minnesota in the summertime, that generation that's raised in Minnesota in, say, late August, early September, those ones leave Minnesota and fly, in that case, about 2,000 miles down to this precise area of Mexico in the central Mexican mountainous forests. And so those ones make that entire trip.
At which point do they procreate?
Oh, you're funny.
I know.
I've actually seen them mating on the way to Mexico. And I'm not certain about all of that, whether they mate much while they're down there in the forests of Mexico or when they leave. But I think it occurs sort of at various points. But definitely when they leave the forests of Mexico, the females are mated and are fertilized. And then those females leave the Mexican forests really early in the spring, probably February, March, and start making their way up north. So those monarchs have lived a long time, much longer than any other monarchs, where they've lived about 5 months. So they leave Minnesota, let's say, early September, get to Mexico around late October, early November, overwinter, and then leave in early spring.
And go back. And
then they fly up through Texas and Arkansas. I saw some early this year looking very beat up. Because they're not young anymore, they're old, and they've had to fly, you know, this long distance down to Mexico, overwinter, and then fly quite a ways back up through Texas and Arkansas, and hopefully laying eggs along the way on milkweeds.
And so if they're laying eggs along the way, when the group leaves in September, are they picking up monarchs along the way that join their group?
That's right, yeah. Okay. The millions upon millions. In the best years, people estimate that up to a billion monarchs overwinter in Mexico. Unfortunately, that whole phenomenon is falling apart a bit. So in the best years that they've recorded, they've been recording this for about 20 years, up to a billion, sometimes 500 million, but in 2012, I believe, they only recorded 60 million monarchs down there, which is still a lot of monarchs, but way down from a 500 million to a billion. And in 2013, they think there were only 30 million monarchs overwintering in Mexico. So they think the phenomenon might be lost, this mass migration, for a number of reasons. What was your question?
Oh, about picking up extra or picking up monarchs along their way.
So it's sort of like, you know, everybody coming to a music festival, you know, from all over Northeast United States, these monarchs are flying, like I say, so all across from Maine, Vermont, Delaware, Virginia, they're all funneling down to Mexico. So they're picking up all the monarchs that are there.
So you can actually see in places at certain times a large group of butterflies flying together?
Absolutely. You know, I haven't seen it a lot. I remember one fall, and I can't remember how long ago it was, but I saw thousands of monarchs migrating through Arkansas. You could see them up high in the sky. You could see them down low, and they were moving southward and westward.
But you've only seen it once.
I've only seen that once where I've seen large numbers. Now, every year I see some coming through and feeding on nectar plants in Arkansas. And that brings up an important point. It's extremely important for people to plant nectar-bearing flowers for that fall migration. They have to replenish their sugar reserves from nectar, which then they turn into fat, which they use to overwinter. So they have to refuel, just like I compare it to a car. If you're on a 1,000-mile journey or a 2,000-mile journey, you have to stop at a gas station every couple hundred miles and refuel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And exactly the same for the monarchs. They have to refuel all along the way, both going their southward journey and their northward journey.
Well, so it's spring right now. You know, we have lots of colorful plants that and flowers that people are planting in their gardens. But for the fall, I know a lot of people plant like mums and things like that for that fall color. What other types of plants should we be planting in September for the monarchs?
Goldenrods, mm-hmm. asters, buddleia, which is non-native, but buddleia is a great nectar plant. And I see the monarchs in the fall often on buddleia. So really during that sort of September period, I'd say during September, it's really important that monarchs can refuel. And so if you can plant these things that have nectar, that'll be very important for them to, you know, stop, visit, drink nectar, and then fly on further. They have to have that all the way, both directions. And if they don't, they're in trouble.
And when they get back and they've, you know, laid their eggs and are the females die and the life cycle continues?
Right, yeah. The females that overwintered probably don't live too long. They probably live like a month or so.
They said that they were beat up.
They're beat up, yeah. They look pretty faded. They lay their eggs. And so that also raises an important point that they need, absolutely have to have milkweed plants. And milkweed is one of those plants which is misnamed. It's called milkweed. People think because it's called weed, it's a weed. It is not. It's a native. There's a whole group of native wildflowers. There's about 11 species of milkweeds in Arkansas. There's about 100 in the nation as a whole. And that's the only thing monarch butterfly larvae eat. Nothing else. They have to have milkweeds in order to reproduce. And that brings up one of the reasons why there's a decline in milkweed butterflies or monarch butterflies. We've put vast areas of our continent into genetically modified organisms, soybeans and corn in particular, which are raised throughout what used to be prairie in Iowa, Minnesota, Illinois. And the farmers herbicide their fields with these Roundup Ready plants. That kills all the milkweeds in what used to be, you know, more of a mixture of plants, not just corn, but there'd be milkweeds. And so we've reduced the habitat for milkweed dramatically. People think there's like 60% less milkweeds present in the United States than there used to be just about 10, 20 years ago. So there's a lot of factors reducing the milkweed population and therefore
the monarch population.
Yeah.
So where can I get and plant milkweed?
Well, there is a thing called Monarch Watch, which is mm-hmm. giving away free seed for your area. You can write to them and they'll send you seeds which you can plant. You can buy them from some of the native plant nurseries. You can gather seeds in the summer when you see a milkweed plant that's got its pod full of those beautiful seeds which form these winged fluffy things that float around, you can gather those and plant them.
Dr. Donald Steinkraus is an entomologist at the University of Arkansas, and he talks about insects with Ozarks at Large's Christina Karnatz almost every month. Walker Russo will end late tonight. Okay, well, early tomorrow morning, after more than 150 musicians and bands played the stages in all kinds of weather. Caroline Rose was among those performing, and before she made it to Mulberry Mountain for the festival, she came to the Furman Garner Performance Studio here and played for us the song Roll On.
One, two, one, two, three. Ooh, stalking from West Arizona. Just trying to pay rent for he's a screwing and a dead up to a next year's America's dream of copyright issue 99. Further on down this hole, I guess it's time for me to roll on.
Caroline Rose inside the Furman Garner Performance Studio earlier this week. Earlier on this program, we heard about the legendary travels of monarch butterflies, and monarchs are the subject of our Sunday montage. Not the flying kind, but the royal kind. Here are 10 clips dedicated to queens and kings.
Are there, Dad?
As many as you can imagine.
Which one are we going to first? When are we going to get there?
Will there be food? I'm hungry.
Are we getting close? I'm thirsty.
Please, children, be patient. Celeste, remind me next time we go on an adventure with the children. No children.
Now, dear.
Well, I'm a queen.
Sure knew how to start a nuclear war yet?
No.
Oh, first thing we do, apparently. Then we take away your passport and spend the rest of the time sending you around the world.
You obviously know my job better than I do.
Yes, well, you are my 10th Prime Minister, Mr. Blair.
Change, change, change. Change, change, change. Change, change.
this. Look at what I came across on the game show channel.
You will. Glenn and I would like to go for
a mice
and
men. Is that you? Right. You ever told me you were on a game show?
I've actually told you several dozen times. Thanks for listening.
Now look at you. You look so young and sane.
Lee Merriweather couldn't keep her paws off me. Get it? Paws. She was one of three cat women.
So did you win the 10,000?
Would I be living in this dump if I did?
Probably, yeah.
Contestants appearing on the $10,000 pyramid will receive a year's supply of Rice-A-Roni, the San Francisco treat.
Wait a minute. I never got any Rice-A-Roni.
The Empire State Building. He is still carrying Antaro. That is all.
That licks us. There's one thing we haven't thought of.
What?
Airplanes. If he should put Ann down and they can fly close enough to pick him off without hitting her,
you're right. Planes!
Propinquity and property of blood, and as a stranger to my heart and thee, hold thee from this forever!
I were king of the forest, not queen, not duke, not prince. My regal robes of the forest.
If you'd like to see a list of the clips that you just heard, you can go to our website, ozarksatlarge.com.
I'm Bob Garfield. On this week's On the Media, would you sacrifice one person to save five others? Might depend on which language you use to ponder the issue.
When you are thinking about it in a foreign language, it gives you a psychological, emotional distance from the problem. And then more than 40% of people then are willing to say, yes, I'll do that.
Don't miss this week's On the Media from WNYC.
That's Sunday at 11 a.m. on KUAF.
Support for KUAF comes from Adventure Subaru, featuring fuel-friendly, symmetrical, all-wheel drive vehicles and service in the Nelms tradition. Adventure's eco-friendly dealership is located off Interstate 49 and Porter Road in Fayetteville. More information available at AdventureSubaru.com. Children's Advocacy Center of Benton County will host the 5th annual Skydive for Kids fundraiser at the Skydive Ranch in Siloam Springs August 9th and 10th. Participants must be 18 years old and commit to raising donations to empower victims of child abuse seen at the center, with their efforts culminating in a skydive. CACBentonCO.com or 621-0385 for registration or for more information. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, Tahlequah, Oklahoma. Ozarks at Large and Weekend Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Antoinette Grajeda will be bringing you the Monday edition of our program from Studio 123. That's tomorrow at noon and again at 7. We'll end the show with some music that the folks at the Walmart shareholders meeting heard on Friday morning. This was the host of the event, Harry Connick Jr. He said he was going off script and performing what has become a standard at New Orleans funerals. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your weekend.
Just a closer walk with you.
Y'all know that, right?
Grant it, Jesus, if you please.